Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, FJ at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Today, for your listening pleasure, we have an archive show, first published as a newspaper column and podcast episode sometime in the last 10 years. Thanks for listening, and I hope you enjoy it. This story was first published on February 11th of 2024, under the headline, World's First Gas Tax Made Oregon a Driver's Paradise. It's a rewritten and re-researched version of a shorter article that was published in May of 2009, very early in my career writing these. Here we go. When Hosso Herring, the legendary longtime editor of the Albany Democrat Herald, first came to Oregon in the mid-1960s, one of the things that really struck him was the quality of the roads. "All the roads were wide and smooth and well-built," he said, or words to that effect, I don't remember verbatim. "There were no potholes, you could go on all day. You could drive your Mustang as fast as you wanted, nobody would bother you. I'd never seen anything like it." Oregonians of a certain age will know what Herring was talking about, although they may have been less gobsmacked by the quality of mid-century Oregon roads since they grew up with them. Herring is from Cologne, Germany, originally, and still speaks with a noticeable and rather charming trace of Rhenish accent, which I tried, probably unsuccessfully, to emulate in my Hosso Herring impression a minute ago. Anybody who actually knows him will know how poorly I did that, but I had to try. Today, as travelers outside the Beaver State's borders know well, Oregon's roads are merely average, or maybe slightly above average, in terms of crowdedness and quality. Certainly other states tend to have more and wider interstate freeways. But you don't have to go too far back into the past to find a time when Oregon's highway system was something really special. And it's a legacy that goes all the way back to the dawn of motoring, when the Good Roads Movement got started back in the bicycle era. And it really took off in Oregon starting in the early 1910s with the nationally famous Columbia Gorge Highway. However, the true reason for the lion's share of Oregon's transformation into a mid-century motorist's paradise is much more prosaic. Our state was the first in the nation to levy a gasoline tax to fund its highway system. The gasoline tax was born in a law office in Forest Grove belonging to Loyal M. Graham, a member of the state House of Representatives. Graham's good friend and fellow House member W.B. Dennis, who lived in Carlton and represented Yamhill County, had stopped by on a trip to Portland to visit and talk a little shop. Both men were members of the House Highway Committee, and both were well aware that the committee had a big problem on its hands. That problem, of course, was, well, what do you think it was? It was money. Isn't it always money? But they had it especially bad, because the State House had created the Highway Department in 1917 and financed it with a $6 million bond measure to be repaid with property taxes. Voters had approved this bond measure, but not without some grumbling. It was clear that the path to a proper highway system would be a struggle if they had to do it that way. And $6 million, a lot of money at that time, but not compared to what it was going to cost to build the highway system. Also, at that time, of course, cars were still uncommon enough to frighten livestock. Everyday Oregonians were willing to spend a little to make the roads better for everyone, but clearly they would draw the line at spending vast sums to make the state a paradise for rich motorists. And like I said, those sums were going to have to be really, really vast. The $6 million was turning out to be a drop in the bucket of what was going to be needed to set up the state with a proper highway system. But with Graham and Dennis on board, two more bond measures were shepherded through in 1918 for $10 million each, with a stipulation that they'd be paid with highway tolls and fines and not property taxes. But obviously that was a limited source of money. And there was another bigger problem. There was no provision for maintenance. Building roads was plenty expensive, but maintaining them also was not cheap. There was no revenue flowing steadily to keep them maintained, and capital bond levies obviously couldn't be used for routine maintenance. Something else was needed. And that was the situation on that day in the fall of 1918 when Representative Dennis turned to Representative Graham and said, well, couldn't we levy a tax on gasoline? They started out with a penny a gallon, having no real idea how much it would generate. As it turned out, it generated a lot more than they anticipated. It also turned out to be a remarkably frictionless way to get tax money. It was almost painless. Nobody paid it unless they bought gasoline. It was baked into the price of the petrol, collected by the wholesalers, so nobody ever saw the money going out. It also literally saved people money. Potholes and mud bog roads damaged cars. Motorists were happy to pay a few dozen dollars a year for roads when the alternative was hundreds of dollars in car repairs and hundreds of hours stuck by the roadside or nursing a broken automobile back to civilization. The gas tax was as close to win-win as taxation gets. In 1923, thanks to the gas tax, Oregon became the first state west of the Mississippi River to build a paved highway from one of its borders all the way to the other. Highway 99, all 347 miles of it, completed in 1923. In 1955, Oregon built its first freeway, again courtesy of the gas tax, and that was the year before President Eisenhower signed the legislation getting America's interstate freeway system started. That was the Banfield Freeway in Portland, named after a legendary state highway commissioner and now part of Interstate 84. For all that early work, the interstates took a while to get really popular in Oregon, something you might not believe if you've been stuck on I-5 lately. At quitting time on a workday anywhere in the Willamette Valley, the freeway is usually bumper to bumper. But it wasn't always like this. In fact, when Bill Bowerman was coaching the University of Oregon track team back in the late 60s, his runners would use the then newish freeway for practice. They'd run onto the freeway at the North Springfield exit and run to Coburg and back, running in the fast lane going against the flow of traffic, such as there was. On any given day, they'd see a car or two, and they'd see it coming from a long way off, in plenty of time to get to the median to safety. Many longtime residents also remember times, driving between Eugene and Salem, for instance, when they were virtually alone, hurtling along, kings of the highway. Some of us, if you reassure us that the statute of limitations has run out, will admit to having actually switched off the lights for a second just to see what it's like to be hurtling along at 65 miles an hour in the pitch darkness. Well, those days are gone in the valley, although a trip to the Dalles and Pendleton on I-84 can get pretty lonely sometimes. For younger residents, the freeways seem like part of the landscape. Always been there, always will be. But Oregon's freeway system is a relatively young one. I-5 itself was not finished until 66, over 50 years ago. 205, through the east side of the Portland metro area, is much newer. It was completed in 1982. And the most recent addition to the system, I-82 near Hermiston, was finished in 1988. It wasn't all roses, of course. In 1966, Oregon's highway building mojo got a little out of hand when a scheme was dreamed up to run a high-speed highway over the top of a beach on pilings drilled down into the sand at Nestucca Spit. This plan fetched up with a sickening thud on the bulwark of public opinion as well as federal law, and a chastened highway department had to back down. And you just can't bring up the Oregon Highway Department without at least mentioning the time when they used a half ton of dynamite, purchased with gas tax money, of course, to blow up an 8-ton whale that had washed ashore in Florence. From a public relations perspective, that went even worse than the Nestucca Spit wheeze, although come to think of it, the operation did get rid of the whale. The part that was left over on the beach was small enough to be simply buried in the sand. And, oh yes, there definitely is an Offbeat Oregon History article about that, because of course there is. But I can't put a link in a podcast episode, so you'll have to Google it. Other than these few setbacks, the highway department was something Oregonians were generally supportive and proud of over the years. And that is in spite of the fact that the department raised the gas tax several more times. By 1952, it was up to 6 cents. And it's that level of taxation that yielded the glorious motorist's paradise highway conditions that Hoss O'Herring remembers from the old days. Today the gas tax is 40 cents a gallon, which sounds like a big increase until you adjust that 6 cents for inflation. 6 cents in 1952 was worth about 70 cents in modern money. And of course, the average car's fuel economy has changed pretty drastically since the 1950s as well, so there's a lot less cash flowing in per mile driven. So the Highway Department, which since 1969 has officially been called the Oregon Department of Transportation, no longer has the cash flow to spend promiscuously on big, ambitious highway projects like it once did. Key sources in this story included works by Loyal M. Graham and the Oregon Department of Transportation. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I sure hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. Check out our hub page at offbeatoregon.com to explore all the other things we do or to find the full citations and visuals that go with today's show. If you like listening to me and you're at all interested in the bad old days of early Victorian London, think Nicholas Nickleby, Ebenezer Scrooge, you should check out the new podcast I launched at the beginning of this year, the Penny Dreadful Story Hour. It's a weekly, dropping every Saturday evening. Starts out with a handful of words and phrases from the Victorian age thieves and highwaymen's slang lexicon, and then we go through three or four chapters from Sweeney Todd, the Barber of Fleet Street, the old Penny Dreadful version that was distributed in like 1847 on the streets of London. It's a lot of fun, and I'd love for you to check it out. You'll find it wherever podcasts are served, Apple, Spotify, etc. Probably wherever you're getting this one. Again, it's the weekly Penny Dreadful Story Hour. Check it out when you can. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. More information about Atlas can be found at atlasstringband.com. Offbeat Oregon History episodes come out once per weekday, usually around 6 a.m. So it won't be long until your next episode is on your device and ready for you to queue up. Until then, go out and fill up the rest of the day and the weekend with good stuff. Bye now!